It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said the patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have three square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And we'd appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and like the show as well. We've got great information planned for you today. In the second segment, we will be talking with Dr. Jill Vecchio. And you know her. She is one of the few people in the country that read the whole Obamacare bill. And down at the State House, which is now in temporary adjournment, there is a proposal for legislation for a public health option. And typically when you hear the word option and legislation, that may not be the case. So we're going to talk to Dr. Jill Vecchio about that. In the third and fourth segment, Roger Bianco, who is a board member with Leadership Program of the Rockies, has written a piece, Are Public Things Good? And that is such an important question today with what's going on. So we'll talk with Roger in segments three and four. A couple of things that we're doing is we have started something. This was Patty's idea, Headlines for Hope. I get to talk to a lot of different people with my America's Veterans Stories show. I've interviewed over 120 World War II veterans, and we decided to share some stories of hope. We started this on Tuesday. You can go to my website, kimmunson.com, and you can just click on the Headlines for Hope. It'll have the most recent one, and then it'll pull up the other ones on SoundCloud as well. They're about 3 minutes long, and hopefully they'll be somewhat hopeful and inspirational for you. And then we are also starting, in addition to the Kim Munson Show podcast, a Kim Munson podcast. And we're just rolling that out. We did our first one with Dr. Brian Dimitrovic, and I think that's going to be on the website today. Later this morning, I'm going to record one with Rob Nadelson, who has written a very important piece in Complete Colorado regarding this lockdown order and whether or not it's constitutional. And of course, Rob Nadelson is the author of the original Constitution, what it actually said and meant. So we are working hard over here. And with that, just have to say thank you to this amazing group of people that I get to work with. And that is all those at Crawford Broadcasting, as well as our team. That's Steve, Patty, Zach, Keith, and Charlie. I so appreciate all of you, Steve.
You are the leader of the band. We can't play without a leader.
Okay, well, it is a great team, and it's an honor to get to do that. And to each of you listeners, keep calm. Carry on. We are walking through this. I think we're on day 10 of the restaurants being closed down. We're coming in very close to the 15-day request by President Trump to try to keep our social distancing. And we're getting closer and closer to walk through this this crisis. And we're going to find out if it was somewhat man-made. And that's why we continue to look at the truth on this each and every day. So the first thing, and this was sent to me by a friend of mine. It was texted to me yesterday, Cynthia. She said, in 3 short months, just like he did with the plagues of Egypt, God has taken away everything that we worship. God said, you want to worship athletes? I will shut down your stadiums. You want to worship musicians? I will shut down your civic centers. You want to worship actors? I will shut down your theaters. You want to worship money? I will shut down the economy and collapse the stock market. You don't want to go to church to worship me? I will make it so you can't go to church. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will forgive their sin and will heal their land. And then it goes on to say, maybe we don't need a vaccine. Maybe we need to take this time of isolation from the distractions of the world and have a personal revival where we focus on the only thing that really matters, our relationship with Jesus. It's time for the nation to turn our hearts back to Jesus and pray, says, read your Bible. Steve, I read that yesterday and it kind of took my breath away. What's your thoughts on that?
She's hitting the nail on the head. And I've as I go through life, and I don't want to talk about how many decades I have behind me, but I know that the nation, speaking at a national level, back in, say, the earmark or the line in the sand I always refer to is the 63 Supreme Court decision taking prayer out of schools. That was kind of like the point of demarcation where we started to untie ourselves from any real solid biblical, the Judeo-Christian founding.
Well, and I think to that point, if we moved away from foundations, and as we moved into relativism and postmodernism, we realized that instead of having solid foundations, that it's been more relative in the sand. And I think that we've seen that starting to play out in society, with the increased suicide rates, all those kinds of things. And so I think this is a real awakening. And this last thing, to read your Bible. I had a good friend. He has since passed on. He studied at Stanford. He was a scientist. And many times scientists have been atheists. But he came to Christianity in the early 60s. And he taught a great class that I learned so much from. It was Christianity and the Contemporary Culture. And one of the things he really recommended is daily Bible reading. And I try to do that. And probably within the next month or so, I will have completed reading the whole Bible. That doesn't mean I got everything. I have to tell you, there were times in Leviticus where I'm like, oh man, I got to get the tires, rotated on the car, a variety of things. But it's been a good discipline for me. And the Bible is something to be taken in the whole story. It's a continual story of God's pursuing man to have a relationship. There's some stuff in there that I don't quite understand. But you have to remember, it's a whole big story, Steve.
Did you get to the point in Revelation where it says, go back to Genesis, go back to page one? I see. But back to your point made earlier, as a boy growing up and being very mischievous and exploratory.
I could see that. I bet your mother was in the principal's office, or you were in the principal's office a lot.
Let's not go there. If you've ever been on ice that's breaking, or if you get yourself into a muddy situation, the first thing you do is seek something solid to stand on. And I look at the country right now, I say, that's one of the problems we've got. We can't find solid ground.
And I think through this coronavirus thing, this China virus thing, I think that we're going to get through to that. So as we continue on, though, each of you listeners, you're treasured, you're valued, and use today. There's a great opportunity. If you're staying at home right now, clean the cupboards, come out of this on the other side, ready to roll, because we are going to be walking through this. And every day we're getting closer to getting through this, to find the truth. And Steve, I thought a lot about it. So last night was my wine and tapas girls, and we did this virtually, and it was really, really interesting. And I think that we need to just realize that we are going to be walking through this, and that on the other side, we're going to see the truth. And we're going to look back and we're going to say, who had a measured response? Who was somebody that was trying to give us hope? Who was somebody that was really trying to find solutions? And who were those that are trying to take this opportunity to push their political agenda? And I think that we're going to see that. And the positive thing is the veil is off on these agendas and people are paying attention. Steve, before this thing, you and I'd have conversations about people aren't really paying attention to what's happening down at the State House. They're going to be paying attention right now. We are seeing the effects of what life would be like with the New Green Deal and with socialism. Under socialism, you have empty shelves at your grocery store. You have to wait in line to go do something. We've just taken all that for granted. And so I think there's something really positive that the veil is off on the agenda and that people are paying attention, Steve.
Well, let's hope everything you just said is factual. It is what is happening, that they are paying attention. And will they continue to pay attention even after this debacle is behind us? Because in my mind, we've had a couple decades now, three or four decades of people not paying attention at all.
Well, I think this is a big wake-up call. So I find great solace in that. Let's go ahead and go to our inspiration. It's John F. Kennedy, often referred to by JFK or called Jack. He was an American politician who served as the 35th President of the United States from January 1961 until his assassination in November of 1963. He served at the height of the Cold War and the majority of his work as president concerned relations with the Soviet Union and Cuba. And he says, the great enemy of the truth is very often not the lie, deliberate, contrived, and dishonest, but the myth, persistent, persuasive, and unreliable. Is that not timely for right now, Steve?
You know, every time you pull one of these out, I refer to it as like watering houseplants, where the water just sits on top, it won't sink in. That's one of those. I'd have to sit there and sift through that for a little bit. Again, apply it to what I have seen in my years of living.
Well, and that was, you know, he's president back in 1961. So, you know, it's pretty timeless when you look at these timeless truths. Our funnies. Ready?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. One of the good things about the coronavirus, or the Wuhan virus, is that the country is realizing that we can survive in a world without celebrities and professional sports. However, the farmers aren't shutting down. Upcoming events, we were planning on doing the three punches to knock down democratic socialism with Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice. And because of all this, we are rescheduling that for June 22nd at Water's Edge Winery. And then Dee Dee Chisholm and Abby Sinnott with Bella Health and Wellness need some supplies. And so they're getting very creative regarding medical gowns. They are asking for some extra large cotton dress shirts, some men's extra large cotton dress shirts. And if you can help them out, email me at kim@kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And we'll get you guys connected on that. And then before we go to break and talk to Jill Vecchio in the next segment, we need to buckle down and really help all of our restaurants, bars, and taverns here in Colorado. With Governor Polis and Mayor Hancock's edict to close dine-in options for individuals, restaurant workers are facing some lean times. And so restaurants are getting creative, and Hooters Restaurants is a very valued partner of mine and really support my shows. So let them know how much you appreciate their sponsorship by stopping by and picking up dinner to take home, or you can have Hooters wings delivered to your front door via one of the delivery services. You can try their original wings or some of their delectable smoked wings. And they're adding a curbside pickup for to-go orders. You can order your food at order.hooters.com, and it's a very popular option. And in these interesting times, we need to take the Queen's advice to stay calm and carry on. We are Americans. Let's act like it. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk with Dr. Jill Vecchio and regarding this public health option, healthcare option that is proposed down at the State House. Stay tuned.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Water's Edge Winery and Bistro is celebrating 5 years in business this month and will be reopening on March 31st, 3 to 8 p.m., Tuesday through Sunday. Located near the northwest corner of Arapahoe and University, they are offering to-go food and wine to keep you fed and happy. Beginning March 31st, call 720-381-6663 to place your curbside to-go order or stop in to grab your bottles and lunch or dinner. That's 720-381-6663. Or follow Water's Edge Winery and Bistro Centennial on Facebook or Instagram for updates and specials.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. We have show recaps with podcasts. We've got our headlines for hope, and we have our new feature, which will be the Kim Munson podcast. And so be sure and check that out. Like us on Facebook. Greatly appreciated. On the line with me is a really dear friend, and that is Dr. Jill Vecchio. She's a pretty amazing woman. She is not only a radiologist, but she took it upon herself to read the whole Obamacare bill. unlike most of the legislators that passed it, so that she could understand what it really said and what it really meant. And so she's an expert on this kind of stuff, and we want to talk with her about this public option that's being proposed down at the State House. Dr. Jill Vecchio, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. It's great to be here. I hope everybody's safe and sound.
Well, I think
sequestered in their home.
we're knocking on wood that's the case. But you're starting to get your brain around this. Let's see, the legislation is House Bill 20, 1349. For all you listeners, these bills as they're proposed, it's either HB or SB. HB comes out of the House, SB comes out of the Senate. It'll have the year and then the number. So it's House Bill 20, 1349. They're calling it the Colorado Affordable Health Care Option. Dr. Jill Vecchio, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, and the introduction in your show about force, this is right up your alley. This is all force, and it's really amazing. It's not even Medicare for all or Medicaid for all, because it's just force. I mean, hospitals have the option of opting out of Medicare and Medicaid, or limiting the number of patients they see, or not seeing any at all. But hospitals are forced to participate in this, or the state can shut them down.
Oh, and we, you know what, we've seen the state will shut things down, won't they, Jill Vecchio?
Bingo. So, I can give some background information just so people kind of have an overall way to start thinking about this. Is that okay?
Please do.
Okay, so this bill really only affects hospitals, but there are several things people need to understand. So what this does essentially is create kind of a Medicare plan that is completely controlled by the insurance commissioner and an advisory board that will always be partisan one way or another, 7-2. There never has to be any bipartisan vote ever. So, and the advisory board and the commissioner are in charge of auditing themselves.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Right. So this is initially meant to only cover the individual market, but one of the first jobs of the insurance commissioner when this thing takes effect is to figure out how to expand it to the small group market. So that's really what this is about. This is about expanding this as quickly as possible. And they expand it to the small group market before they even evaluate it to see how well it's doing in the individual market. So they start it in 2022 in the individual market. By 2023, they want to expand to the small group market, but they don't even evaluate the individual market until 2024, and they do their own evaluation. It's not an external audit. It can be if they want to, but it doesn't have to be. Okay, so Fox is guarding the hen house. Now, they get to make up rules about how much to pay hospitals for covering, you know, what the reimbursement rates will be for hospitals based on a multiplier of Medicare, and the multipliers change depending on what kind of a hospital it is. So, like, Health One hospitals won't get as much reimbursement as a rural independent hospital that may take care of a lot of Medicare and Medicaid patients. So it's not equal protection, you know, at all. But that's, you know, government's been subsidizing rural hospitals and hospitals that take care of more poor reimbursement patients to begin with. Now, I think a lot of folks know, but I'll reiterate, the only reason hospitals and insurance companies are still in business at all is because of private insurance. Government insurance, Medicare and Medicaid, with Medicare, most providers break even. With Medicaid, you always lose money. It costs you money to see Medicaid patients.
Okay, Jill, let's...
And how many businesses operate like that?
Yeah, let's just explain that to everybody. So on Medicare, that means that if you went out to work every day, that you would just break even. You wouldn't really make any money. You would just break even for your work. But under Medicaid, you would go to work and you would actually still owe money to somebody. Right.
You would be paying every time a Medicaid patient walks into your office or your hospital, you would be paying money. It costs you money to see somebody. So it's like us walking into the grocery store and piling up our cart with a bunch of groceries and just walking out. Gee, what did I just do that for? Why do I want this person walking into my office? So that's why, just because you have Medicare and Medicaid doesn't mean you can find a physician that can take care of you, because they can't afford to have all Medicare and Medicaid patients. They can only afford to have a certain number of them, because otherwise they can't pay their overhead. They can't keep their office open. They'd have to close. So the private insurers always reimburse providers, hospitals and providers, at a much higher rate than what Medicare and Medicaid do, in order to support the entire healthcare system. Okay?
Okay.
So now what this bill does is shift that many more people into a program that will reimburse hospitals, and this is really only applies to hospitals, but there's a little asterisk after that as well. It will reimburse hospitals at a lower rate over time, because let's face it, whatever they start with, it's going to go down over time, right? So the initial reimbursement may be tolerable, but starting after July 2024, a year and a half after it starts, they'll be able, or 2.5 years, they'll be able to start decreasing that the reimbursement ratios.
Okay, Jill.
And that's what will always happen, but the hospitals are now they can't make money off of those people, so now everybody else's premiums are going to go even higher, because it's all that cost is going to get shifted over. Now, they say it's not, we're going to guard against that. Well, baloney. You know, they'll find a way to do it.
Okay, now, Jill, on this whole Obamacare thing, and that's how we first met, is you had read right. that, and then you were making some presentations on that. And you had mentioned something that I hadn't really thought about, and that was healthcare rationing. And so Patty had found this piece in the Colorado Sun just recently. It said, if it gets bad, Colorado doctors have a plan for who gets life-saving coronavirus treatment and who doesn't. And Dr. Matthew Winia, the director of Center for Bioethics and Humanities at the University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus, and a national expert on crisis standards of care, says this: one possible triage system included in an appendix to the plan, for instance, contemplates a point system for new patients. Those who are older, who have dangerously low blood oxygen levels, or who are having severe difficulty breathing, score higher, meaning they are seen as being the less likely to survive and thus less likely to receive a scarce treatment when vying for that treatment against lower scoring patients. And I'm just trying to connect a dot with what they're saying there to what might happen on this public option. Is there a correlation?
Anytime you have, it's kind of two different things. Because this plan would require insurance companies to offer this state option, but it wouldn't require anyone to purchase it. So people could get out of it. Patients could get out of it. What you're talking about is really kind of like a single payer or universal healthcare government option thing, where one of the only methods they have of containing their costs, since they've created a limited resource, right? We've talked about that. Mm-hmm. Once you have a single entity that's controlling all the money, it's one pie, and if one person takes a bite out of that pie, somebody else can't have that bite of the pie. You know what I mean? Whereas the system we have now is not like that. So the healthcare rationing that you're talking about and setting triage measures of saying, okay, well, we have to, let's say we only have 1,000 ventilators and we have 1,001 patients who need them, who doesn't get the ventilator? And it's you know, that's been an ethical dilemma forever in medicine, like especially whenever there's a limited resource, like organ transplants, you know, transplantable organs available for transplant. So when I was in medical school, that was a big deal for an ethical discussion. Who gets the transplant? Who gets that liver? Who gets that kidney? How do you decide?
Okay.
So that's always going to be an issue in anything when you have a limited resource, a limited set. So if we had unlimited ventilators, then you wouldn't have to ever make that decision.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does. And Jill, this is such a fascinating conversation, and I know that we're going to need a lot more time on this. So I think you're going to be on the show next Wednesday, and you'll have the last two segments 3 and 4 for us to continue to unpack this. Because I think it's really important that people understand this before this legislature gets back into session. So we're out of time, unfortunately, but you'll be on next Wednesday again. So I'm excited about that, Jill.
Great. Take care, everybody.
Okay, we'll continue on with that next week. Dr. Jill Vecchio, she gives amazing perspective on all of these medical things. On the line is Jason McBride. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, 303-694-1600. How you doing?
Apparently I'm going to be leading a sheltered life for the next couple weeks, right?
I think so. Can you believe it? Can you honestly believe it in the United States of America that this is going on?
If you would have asked me a month ago if this would have been going on over a mild virus, I would not have believed it. If you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I would have said it's a certainty.
Okay, well, it is what it is. I was thinking the same thing, you know, that you have to have papers now, basically, to travel around in the United States of America. I just can't believe it.
Only if you're a legal citizen.
It's true. True that. So what's going to happen today? What are you seeing in the futures? What do you think?
Well, yesterday was an interesting day, Kim. The markets were extremely strong, but we did kind of fade and give back some gains towards the end of the day. The Dow was up well over 1,000 at one point. It faded out a bit at the end of the day. It closed up 495. And the NASDAQ actually gave back all of its gains yesterday and ended up slightly negative. And I think this was a lot was worries on the stimulus bill. Late in the day, you had a couple of senators that were trying to, throw some rocks in the chili. Bernie Sanders started hollering. I think there were a few others. So it didn't look like it was going to pass. Apparently, it has now passed the Senate, and the market's not thrilled, it doesn't look like, this morning. The Dow futures are down about 400 as we speak, Kim. But as we've learned, that could be very, very different at the open and also by the end of the day.
Okay, with all of this volatility, it's important to, you know, test what your personal risk tolerance is, put together a plan that is for the long term, and certainly assess it on a somewhat regular basis. And that's where you and your team over at Presidential Wealth Management comes in, Jason.
Well, that's very true. And sometimes when you get into a market like this, you can find out that your risk tolerance isn't what you thought it was, and you might make adjustments going forward so you don't end up feeling this way again. But I would say don't make rash decisions, just based purely on emotion. Still take an objective approach. Look at what you're really doing and decide what your next move is going to be. Again, over and over, Kim, I mean, in most instances, if you own a good, solid mutual funds that own good, solid domestic companies, historically, if the market's been down about 30% off the high and you added to your funds at that point, you came out okay in the long run. Short term, you may miss the bottom by a little bit, but at least historically, that has worked out. So it's something to think about. Certainly not a screaming buy recommendation for everybody out there, but hopefully, a voice of reason from many years of experience, research, and reading from those that have been far more successful than I have, too, that's for sure.
Okay, well, I'd highly recommend that people take this time when they're in coronavirus lockdown here in Colorado to they can reach out to you via airpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com. Or call the switchboard at 303-694-1600. 303-694-1600. Is Natalie manning the switchboard virtually, or how's that working, Jason?
No, she's manning the switchboard with her on her cell phone. She's still transferring calls to all of us, and we're using our cell phones. We're all set up in our home offices, so for the most part, other than having people come in for appointments, which I'm sure Governor Paulus does not consider essential, I wouldn't think, we're open for business and here to help. So even if folks just want to talk over the phone, we're good.
Okay. And you know what, Jason? Don't drive your beautiful wife, Melissa, crazy, okay?
Are you kidding me? She won't get me coffee. She won't do. I've been trying to have fun and saying everybody in the house is my assistants. They're not cooperating.
Not a bit, huh? So
no, I can't get a break. Hey, speaking of that, real quick, Kim, I had one more kind of positive shout out I wanted to give to a business. Do we have another
Absolutely.
Minute?
Absolutely, do it.
Okay, and this happened before all this broke out, so it's really late. I had to go to the ear doctor because I had some wax in my ear, and I went and saw this guy. It's Dr. Seth Reiner, and he's right off of 470 in Broadway. And I got to tell you, from the initial phone call, what a fabulous experience. His office gal that answered the phone, her name was Tracy. She was just wonderful from the minute she picked up the phone, got me into the appointment the same day, went in. I mean, the atmosphere there was just wonderful. The doctor, Seth, he was absolutely wonderful. You know, and I just paid by myself, and I want to say that the price was very wonderful, too. So might seem like it's out of the blue, Kim, but it was really one of those neat experiences. You know, what you and I have come to deem as what we call a Spencer experience.
You got it. It's people that are cheerful, doing the extra mile, and bringing great services and goods to us. So thanks so much, Jason. I appreciate it so much.
Yeah, and I can hear you again now, too.
That's good. So, well, we'll talk to you tomorrow. That's Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Roger Bianco is the founder of the LPR Mentor Program, as well as a board member on Leadership Program of the Rockies. And he's written a really interesting op-ed that's at my website, kimmunson.com. And it's about our public things good. And what an important question as we're going through this coronavirus situation here in Colorado and in the United States. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk with Roger Bianco.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And like us on Facebook. We'd greatly appreciate that. On the line with me is Roger Bianco. He is the founder of the Leadership Program, the Rockies Mentor Program, as well as he is on the board there. And welcome to the show, Roger Bianco.
Hey, Kim. Good morning. How's everyone doing over there?
Doing just fine. No complaints. And you've written a really interesting piece about are public things good? And I love the graphic that Zach has put together with this. It's just really clever. So yeah. Go to my website and check it out. But tell us about this op-ed, Roger Bianco.
Well, you know, it's one that I've actually had written for a number of months, but I decided I'd bring it out here now because of all this talk, and I've heard a lot of talk of, well, we need to nationalize things to address this crisis, and we need to, even before the crisis, you hear, because there are some people who don't need a crisis to want to make things owned or want to make things, quote-unquote, public. And the whole thing, the whole thought hit my mind probably, it was still 10 years ago. I was actually at a kind of a community and neighborhood forum for the local school board elections, and candidates are up there, and someone brings up, one of the candidates brought up the idea of school choice, and someone in the audience who it was opposed to school choice, you know, raised their hand and kept emphasizing the word public in public education. He kept saying, but what you're saying is, or what I want you to know is I believe that you're governing public education, and we have to have a good public education system, and if you allow kids to go where they want, that might jeopardize the public education system. And he kept emphasizing over and over the word public. And I thought, huh, that's curious. And ever since then, I've heard that repeatedly. It's just been a consistent drumbeat. Even when what prompted me to write this was when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez endorsed Bernie Sanders. She had the microphone, and she said, we really need more public things. We've got to get, and again, that whole idea of emphasizing the word public. And so what I thought was, well, here's what they're doing. They're begging the question. They're trying to get people to believe that if something, or just trying to get you to agree or acknowledge that if something is quote-unquote public, and if I emphasize it in my speech, then it becomes good. Then it's a good thing, and it must be protected, and it must be, you know, it's this virtuous idea that we make something public, therefore it becomes good, and it is good for people and fairly administered, and just all these assumptions that go into the idea that something's public. And I thought, I wonder how people think about public education and or public anything, not just education, but public anything. And let's look at the record of these things, and let's look at what actually happens when something is administered by the public. And to me, public just means government. That's what public means. Public means something that is government-run. And so, you know, let's figure out the whether this is, you know, in Leadership Program of the Rockies, we are taught and we discuss and cover one of the critical elements of the program is what is the proper role of government. And so it seems like a lot of people assume that it is proper for government to administer things and for certain things to be public. So that's what was kind of behind this. And then I started getting into how do people think about this? And it's just an interesting time, as you said a couple minutes ago, it's an interesting time to really be thinking about this, given this push, you know, Mayor de Blasio saying, I'm talking about massive nationalization of key industries. Okay, you know, I mean, the assumption being if we do that, it will work. I don't know. I mean, there's not a great record. Government does not have a great record of solving problems that it purports to solve.
It's so interesting, and I think that we're going to try to get started a little part of the show where I have people, friends of mine that grew up under socialism, will call in and just explain what, you know, that this isn't really that different from socialism. What we are experiencing right now, I have a good friend that immigrated from Poland many years ago, and she said this is what it was like when we were in Poland under communism and socialism. Ah. The shelves were bare at the market. You had to get up and go over and stand in line to get things, and that's what happens when things become public, because it takes out the quote unquote self-interest. And people look at that and they, you know, sometimes very altruistically and say that, oh, you know, self-interest, that's not a good thing. Well, actually, each person going out there and trying to create value that will other people will find that they'll trade their value for, in essence, making your self-interest, you're trying to do a good job so that you can improve your life. There's something that's really virtuous about that, Roger.
Absolutely. I'd say, number one, it works. Number two, it's correct. It's right. It's the right approach to things. Because if, as an individual, you know, if I have an idea, and all of us have probably had an idea, go, boy, I bet if I invented X, it would work. Well, not everyone actually follows that idea. If an individual is courageous enough to follow that idea, what's their motive? Well, they want to create something that's going to better other people's lives. They want to create something that's going to better their lives. That's the motive. We're going to continue to see people do those things so long as they have the freedom to do it. And in the end, what it is that you're just trying to make the most of what God has given you. You're trying to make the most of your mind. You're trying to make the most of your creativity. And you deserve a system that rewards that, because it's not an easy thing. Taking risk, it's interesting about spending other people's money. Yeah, it's about spending. The government always wants to spend other people's money. It's about spending other people's money, but it's mostly about, I was just talking to my daughter about this the other day, it's mostly about taking something or claiming something that is simply not yours, the labor that is not yours. I heard a bit of your discussion with Dr. Vecchio, same kind of idea there, you know. I mean, someone might have, when they were 8 years old, had a stethoscope around their neck thinking, I want to be a doctor. But it doesn't mean that they actually went out and did it. And okay, so she went out and did it, and it's not easy. And she deserves to experience the full fruit of her labor, not to be told by government what and who and when, and, you know, have them be the intermediary between her and her patients, because there is an ethical and moral duty to do the best by your patients, on and on. But here's what another interesting point about this, Kim. I was trying to figure out, okay, how do people feel about government? Are people suspicious of this? And the answer is absolutely they are. There was a great survey I found by Chapman University, conducted in 2017. And what they found was 74% of Americans think government corruption is their top fear, believe government corruption is their top fear. It was remarkable that 3 out of 4 Americans are more worried about government abuse of power than world war. That is an earned sentiment. Government has earned that sentiment. I've said this a few times on your show. I was born and raised in Chicago. All right, in Chicago area, I should say.
Vote early and vote often.
Yeah, vote early, vote often. I remember, you know, the thundering debates and Alderman Ed Verdoliak. I mean, the guy was a stinking filthy. He got really rich on his quote unquote public service. You know, it's mm-hmm. It's a very different thing. So Americans we are and should be always, I believe it is inherently healthy, to be skeptical of government actions. And right now, no one's asking these questions because this is a crisis. Okay, you know, we could talk about that, figure out, you know, what the appropriate course of action is, so on and so forth. But there's no thinking right now. There's no concern as to whether government should be doing what it's doing. It's just this overriding urgency, and on the right and left they invoke war, and so this is kind of like a war, and so we have to set aside certain things that as Americans we have because we're in a war situation. We'll talk next time about what happens on the other side of these things, which is that government never relinquishes its power. So Americans have, not fully at least, Americans have this skeptical nature of, and fear of government corruption, and it's earned.
You know what? Let's go to break, Roger, and continue on with this discussion. And I did just see The Wire came across with unemployment numbers, yeah, which are pretty significant. I'm really, really concerned about that. So we can talk a little bit about that when we come back from break as well. This is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Roger Bianco. He is a board member of Leadership Program of the Rockies, as well as the founder of their LPR Mentor Program. And we will be right back.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, and be sure and like us over on Facebook. We've got some new things coming in on the website. The first is our Headlines for Hope. These are some great little three-minute snippets, approximately, of just some stories of hope. And then we're starting a new podcast in addition to the show podcast, and that will be the Kim Munson podcast. We may name it something different, but we're just trying to get that going. Dr. Brian Dmitrovic, I talked with him. You know him. He's an economic historian. He wrote the book with Larry Kudlow, JFK and the Reagan Revolution, The Secret to America's the secret history of America's prosperity. So that's going to be very good. On the line with me is Roger Bianco. He is a board member of Leadership Program in the Rockies. He's written a really important piece, Our Public Things Good. And before we continue on talking about the op-ed, very concerning unemployment numbers. Not a surprise, I wouldn't say, though, Roger. In fact, I don't think the market's probably going to be surprised with that. That's already probably figured into the markets somewhat. What do you think?
Probably. Kind of linking back to a little bit about this idea of government and things that are public, you know, I think what this shows you is that government force is a powerful thing. It is a powerful thing. And this is not the end of probably not the end of the unemployment. You can't shock the American economy the way that it has been shocked and not expect a pretty drastic increase in unemployment and the things that ripple from that. So this is going to be something that we're going to be dealing with economically for quite some time here, I think.
Mm-hmm. You shut down American business, and it's not a surprise we get these unemployment numbers. So we need to get America back to work as soon as possible. And to your point, our public thing's good. It is government officials that have used their power to shut down many of our businesses. Now, you know, the jury is still out. We don't quite know about this whole coronavirus thing. But something I've been concerned about, and that is the leadership on these narratives. There's something out there that has some unknowns, uncertainty. The market doesn't like it. People don't like that. You know, can you get this from, you know, the banister at, you know, at the office or not? I don't think we really know for sure. You know, so there's all this uncertainty. But I think a good leader would come in with a measured response instead of with a heavy hand and saying, we are closing businesses for 8 weeks. That puts the fear of God in people. And then people react with panic and fear, and that can, you know, that goes throughout their whole life. And so it's public policy, that word public, that has caused this in many regards, in my opinion,
well,
Roger.
Public health, right? The idea of public health. In the end, I think what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to figure out, put these things on a scale. You know, in the end, we're going to have to ask ourselves, because what we've done all this in the name of public health, right? And if I read into that a little bit, and if I'm reading into it correctly, what it is it's public health in order to try to eliminate or reduce human suffering, right? That's the justification. And so as we see these pretty draconian measures and things that are seem to be, well, I mean, they're as we see these things happen, I think on the other side of that scale is what kind of human suffering has been created by the government response to the virus. And I think in the end, we're going to have to put these things on a scale and figure out, okay, did we, and that's, if we create more public suffering with the response, then it doesn't seem like the response was appropriate. Government outstepped its proper role and is doing more damage than is necessary. I think one of the issues with this, Kim, is something you said, it is the unknown. I remember there was an episode with, I think it was Rand Paul and Chris Christie, during the 2016 Republican primaries. There was one of the debates where Rand Paul basically was telling Governor Christie that he was violating the Fourth Amendment with his kind of in the wake of 9/11 measures to try to make New Jersey more safe. And Chris Christie told Rand Paul, he said, well, it's very different if you're sitting in the power of government. You know, if you're sitting in the seat of government, it's a very different thing. You're responsible for, and then he went on to say, all the things that you're responsible for. So I think this isn't even an outstretch. This is something that has come from this reliance that as American citizens, we've come to immediately turn and look to government, you know, and it's put into us when we're young. I remember in school we were supposed to write letters to the president. You know, and this is going to date me, but it was Jimmy Carter. We had to write letters to Jimmy Carter. And I remember one kid wrote a letter. I don't know why I've always remembered this, but for 40-plus years I've remembered that one of my classmates wrote a letter to Jimmy Carter asking him to do something about how people leave dog poop in the local park. So it's, you know, that's what they're supposed to do. That's what's been kind of this progressive, largely progressive idea that's been brought in, that we're supposed to, when we have a crisis like this, we have something that threatens the health of some of the most vulnerable people that we have, then we have to look to government to do it. And you see it. I haven't watched a lot of these news conferences because I'm too busy to do it, but you can see it in some of these news conferences. They say, you know, Mr. President, how many ventilators are you going to make, and how many, you know, and it's at least, you know, Trump has engaged the private sector. I think he acknowledges they can do it. The private sector can do it better, but, you know, that's the idea. I think this is something that we ask government to do these days. We've forgotten what our responsibility is, and that's one of the reasons why it has a tendency to create frustration. Relying on government creates a good amount of frustration.
Well, and we need to, and I think this is the real gut check for Americans, and that is where we are going to really see who we are. I think the veil is off on a number of things. For example, when I found out that the director of Tri-County Health had the power to close down the three counties, Douglas, Adams, and Arapahoe, and realized that this power was given to him via state statute. But he is an unelected, unaccountable bureaucrat. And I think most people in America still believe in this representative government, where we have somebody that we can vote on, depending on the decisions that we make. And we've seen this while we've been kind of fat and happy and not paying attention. We've seen that representative government has been pushed off to unelected bureaucrats. And we're just about out of time, Roger, but there's three things that you mentioned in your piece here, Are Public Things Good? And I'd like you very quickly to go through those about poverty. We've spent money on poverty.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What?
So this is what to remember. There very rarely is any discussion as to whether this actually works or what happens. And let's evaluate. If we're going to spend all this money, let's evaluate whether it worked, and let's think about it so that next time maybe the response is better. We spent $23 trillion since the Great Society to alleviate poverty, and now poverty is generational. It's a generational, almost institutional thing in some communities. No, that's not just it didn't work. It miserably failed, and we've done terrible things to people who are relying on those programs. We spent 150% of OECD per pupil global average on education, but students continue to slip in comparison with other countries. We've spent more than $1.6 trillion on housing assistance, and we still have millions of homeless. But in the end, what happens is the net worth of the elected officials, the income and benefits of these bureaucrats who are unelected is higher than the people in the private sector. And now I read last night that $1 in $3 in the U.S. economy, I can't vouch for this number, but it would be shocking to me if it were true, and that is $1 in $3 in the U.S. economy circulates, and the government has its hands on it at some point, you know. I think we have to think. That's all I'm saying is let's ask the question, what is appropriate, what is measured, what is the proper role of government, and if government does seize the public option and the public mantra, as many politicians want us to, does it work? And is it the best way to solve our problems? That's all I'm asking. And then there's other research that shows that government just doesn't relinquish its authority.
Okay, so you're going to do another op-ed, and you're going to be on the show here in a couple of weeks on the Ratchet Effect. And to what you're saying, my mom and dad always used to say, now put your thinking cap on and pay attention. And that's what we need to do. Roger Bianco, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we'll talk to you next month. And our quote for today is John F. Kennedy. He says, in the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. The sun is coming up. God bless you, and God bless America.